Going off of your experiences growing up, so you're in this band Quetzal and you have been really successful and won a Grammy and stuff. So how did then your experience growing up lead you? Like, how did you find yourself to be with the group Quetzal?
I have had, after my dad left, like I was about 11 years old, and he kind of left my mom to raise all four of us. We started involving ourselves in a lot of music and acting type of stuff, and so I naturally started gravitating towards just wanting to become a singer. But that turned out to be pretty bad because most of the time, you in the within the industry anyway, Hollywood industry, being Latina and a woman, you get sexualized, right? So that's something that I never liked, and I always, even though I tried to really focus on the craft, I was always constantly being reminded of all the other things that they wanted me to do, and when I refused to do them, I was kicked out of bands, or I was, I didn't get the job, or I didn't, things of that sort. It seemed like my mindset of what music should be was not fitting into what the industry saw me as in relation to my identity, my gender, and all that. So shortly thereafter, I kind of bumped into this community of artists and musicians in East Los Angeles that were thinking about music and art in very similar ways, and community-based, and there had to be important things being said in the music, and mostly around community building and identity, and so that really inspired me and made me want to sort of unite myself more with those kinds of efforts, and it totally changed my life. We started studying social movements from other parts of the world. They were collective sort of, outside of the university. I was going to UCLA at the time, and just bumping into this community of artist musicians, some that were in college, some that were not, was just inspiring, and I totally learned from them. And then I spent a great deal of time in the mountains of Chiapas, Mexico, studying a lot of what the Zapatistas there did, and being inspired by some of the work that they did, and then bringing it back to our own trenches, so to speak, and really started working from there. And so much I know so many of these folks still, we work together still, we build together, and it sort of gave me a new life philosophy in and around music that I've been able to bring forth.
Who would you say are some of the folks that really inspired you along that journey?
Man, there have been so many folks. Well, first of all, my peers, I think, people like Felicia Montes and Claudia and Cristina Gorosica and a lot of the In La Quech poets. Marisol Torres, they're all poets. But then also a lot of musicians from our time, folks like Lisa Flores. Alice Bag, of course, she's one of them, our elders, so to speak. Teresa Covarrubias, and the Brat, yeah, those are some of the folks that,
Definitely. Definitely. And like among that too, I think it's interesting that music is like this medium of this art form, and there's all these other artistic mediums that I know that you've also been a part of, but I guess like what is it really about music for you, or are there other like platforms as well that you like to express yourself through or use?
Yeah, well, I definitely, even if I don't use the other kinds of mediums and platforms to express myself, I'm always in dialogue with them. So we are very always in communication and building with folks like Felicia Montes, who's an artist, performance artist, poet, and dancers, or other kinds of genres of music, bands, so it's sort of we feed each other in all of these different ways. But if I did have to pick another medium, I would say that I've done some theater, not directly. I mean, I've been an actress before, many years in the industry actually, but that's another world. But I've done some theater and music composition for them, and been maybe played a role or two, so it's always fun to be around theater folks. They're
For
crazy.
sure. Do you think like your work in theater has really influenced the type of music you're making or what you have to say?
That's a good point. I don't know. I don't think so. I feel like some people have said that the way I write is in music, it's very like a musical theater like it could be, you know. Mm. And I've thought about that. It's definitely wordy. It's definitely wordy, but I don't try to do that. It's funny because I'm about to write a musical, an opera for a gentleman in Arizona, and he's writing it around an old ancient like Mayan play that has been that is still to this day being performed before colonial times and into the present. I forget the name of it. I would tell you the name of it, but anyhow, so I'm really looking forward to that, to sort of, you know, try my chops out on something else. You know?
Yeah. Is it going to be more of like a rock opera type situation? Or
yes,
like
what I want to go for. Yes, yeah. I want to do that. I really want to just take it out there.
Currently, you're working on the opera, but is Quetzal doing anything currently? Oh. Any projects?
Yes, we are actually, Quetzal just received a commission to write a new album for the Smithsonian Folkways label. Mm-hmm. So this will be our third album on the other label, and this one is focused on the Son Jarocho, particularly looking at, we did a whole research trip last year in the summer, and so we spent the year writing on and off, of course. We all have different things going on, but and we are getting ready to record at the end of June. Mm-hmm. So I gotta get my chops up for that one too.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to it. It's so far the songs are, and although we're writing to sort of the form or the Son Jarocho, in the Son Jarocho form, they are all original compositions.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds really cool too.
Yeah.
I guess also I'm really curious about the work that you've done. I know, like, we studied a lot in class, like, about your work with, like, different collectives and organizations. And I was thinking a lot, too, about Alice Bag recently and how, you know, you were saying she's kind of, like, this elder in this community in a way. And I know she's been, like, mentoring a lot of these up-and-coming, like, underground punk DIY bands.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, I know, like, Quetzal is, like, this very well-respected band as well. Like, have you been working at all to help, like, produce any work or work with any up-and-coming or smaller LA-based bands at all?
All the time.
Yeah.
We're always, I think that we've been really good about remaining accessible to earlier, younger bands. We'll go out and watch them, or we'll, you know, they'll seek us out, you know. So, for example, there's a really great band called Sin Color, and they have this little Salvadorian girl who is like a dynamite. Like, she is hilarious and she's funny, and I mean, she's funny, she's and the most one of the most powerful voices I've ever heard, honestly. So also folks like La Santa Cecilia, when they were first starting out, they would come and see us a lot too, and and sort of get some advice, and you know, who else, Guicani. Those bands have also reached out, and we've helped them get my husband actually Quetzal helped them write their first album, produce their first album, and we were part of their record release. I mean, we're around all the time. Yeah. Marisa Ronstadt, her album, she's originally from Arizona, and when she got here, we helped her out. Maya Jupiter, for example, has also been somebody that I feel like we've mentored in one way or another.
Yeah. That's funny. I was looking at her Instagram the other day and I saw the post. It was like, it was Quetzal and it was you. And it was like, I'm working on this new album. But then I saw it was all the way back from 2016. And I was like, not a new one. But
But she is coming out with a new album.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know what it's called yet, but Quetzal produced it.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I also wanted to talk to you more about the two specific things we talked about in class. And one of those, of course, was Women Who Rock. Mm-hmm. Which I know you played a big part in. So if you wouldn't mind, like, explaining more about that organization and what you've done in it.
Sure. So I'm going to say that the first manifestation of Women Who Rock, or the first inklings or the seeds, were part of a class that we had. So it was actually graduate students thinking up something like this unconference or this conference for up-and-coming academics that were writing about women or women of color. And so most of us were women of color in this graduate class that was spearheaded by Michelle Habel-Payan. She's a professor there. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of our final project. And it kept going because they've received some funding and, you know, but the goal was that we would have a moment of like art, music, dialogue, sort of yeah. convening with women. And, you know, there's definitely the unconference part.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was also very deliberate, folded into that is a very deliberate moment where senior scholars gather around a table, and a day before or 2 days before, they read graduate study work, or undergraduate even, mm-hmm. but mostly graduate study students that are going through it, right? At whatever stage they're at, a chapter or a prospectus or whatever. And then they read it, and then they all comment on it. And there's nothing like having a bunch of monsters sitting around yeah. a boardroom table saying, okay, so this work was a, you present for 5 minutes, and then yeah. they've read your stuff, and then they go, and then everybody comments, you know, and mm-hmm. it's really helpful. And I feel like I went through more than one round of the Women Who Rock, you know, mentorship workshops,
mm-hmm.
which really, I feel like they really strengthened my academic work, and also helped me really reminded me not to check any part of myself at the door, like, you know. It's because it's really, once you get into academia, and as an artist, I kind of wasn't really trying to pay attention to much of the artist part of who I was.
Yeah.
But they're the ones that really said, like, no, you have to bring that in too, and you have to talk about it, and you have to, you know, if you feel like you can express this better with a song, do it. If you think you can, and I was just like, oh, I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
I have to remain, you know, I have to be wordy, I have to be, you know. And yeah. so they were really like, no, we have to challenge the system. Fundamentally, it's not just our presence in the mm-hmm. university. We have to challenge how we do things too,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that collective was really important for my academic, artistic, academic, and spiritual development yeah. in academia.
Yeah. And I also know definitely a big part of Women Who Rock was the idea of really creating this collective archival history that is so often erased in academia and just by normative narratives.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what was your experience like really working with other folks in the community, and what kind of communities did you build through Women Who Rock?
Well, in favoring or not favoring, in focusing on the importance of archiving, you know, these making sure that these histories aren't lost, we first of all pulled on the folks that we knew have never had an oral history done on them, mm. and we have access to them. We invited them. We'd find funding to bring them out, and we'd sit them down and feed them, and then like tell us your life story type thing, right?
Yeah.
Documented that. Found ways of making sure that other students did, you know, transcribed and all that. But then we also in that process, we ended up getting more referrals, right? You think you want to talk to me, but you really want to talk to this other mm-hmm. person. So we realized that it's kind of like a domino effect when it comes to women and these knowledges that are obscured so often, that they know each other, they know mm-hmm. of each other, and that makes the network grow. And so there were so many folks in Seattle, the Seattle area, but also Boyle Heights area, folks that we hadn't thought of. And then another thing which I thought was really great that Women Who Rock does beautifully is put women in conversation with each other, mm-hmm. and new kinds of things happen, right? When mm-hmm. we record this conversation, it's fun for everybody, but mm-hmm. it's also prods these thinkers to, you know, they stimulate each other in other ways, right? That for mm-hmm. me, I think that's also really important, to show kind of like the dialogue or the dialectic and what yeah. kinds of things can come about as a result.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting how you're saying, you know, how this really started off as this very academic project, and referring to, you know, people as monsters who are working in academia, really tearing this apart. So obviously right now you're a professor at like a very elitist, like white private institution. And yeah, I'm very curious how, well, first of all, how you ended up being here at Scripps, but really, again, like how you obviously have done all this amazing work on the ground and in communities, and how you really combine the two areas of your life.
Well, I saw this job when I was looking for jobs. I was writing my dissertation, or finishing up anyway, and this call came up for Chicano Latino Studies, Art, Popular Culture, and alternative methods and all this stuff. And I was like, I printed it out and I said, oh my God. And I went to my partner and I said, look, this is my job. And he said, yes, it is. Make it your job. I took it, and I remember putting it on my vision board. I had a vision board. So, and I said, that's my job. And I applied for 13 jobs. I got job talks at 2 that year. And, so I remember thinking, you know, I'm going to try to find a way to sort of not stand out, but just like, I knew that my background was unique, you know. We had just gotten the Grammy that year, so I have to say it was probably helpful, right, that I look at my resume, and that's one of the things that I thought, no, I'm not going to put that in there, that's not relevant. But the funny part was that it was, oftentimes, it's mentioned faster than, you know, I guess that's brought up more often than the fact that I'm a Ford Fellow, or a Fulbright, or a Woodrow Wilson Fellow. Mm-hmm. Like, people mention the Grammy first. Just right now, it's funny. I just gave a talk, and the dean that introduced me as a Grammy artist, right? And I thought, I don't mind. He's my colleague, and I don't mind that. And I know what he's trying to, the kind of attention he's trying to get for me. But I also feel like for people that don't understand it, I know he does, but for people that don't, I feel like it's really important for me to also remind everybody that I've done that other work, you know, that I think is relevant. And I've done this other stuff. So I really try to I'm constantly code switching, I think. The further I get along in my career, the more comfortable I am in either space, and just like, you know, being who I am.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm in all music space, for example, they're like, hey, so what time do you get off of work? What time do you have to punch in or whatever, right? And I'm just like, suddenly somebody says like, hey, man, she doesn't do that. She's a professor or whatever. And I'm like, ain't nothing. I have to punch in too. Like the kind of punching in that. Anyhow, I guess I'm saying that it takes a minute for them to realize that I'm actually, that I guess I'm a professor in a college, and that always is always met with a kind of like, whoa, wow, like, so why are you doing music? And, you know, I always have to, it's part of who I am, you know? So I feel like I'm trying to balance it out. Somebody asked me today, actually, after the talk, they're like, how do you do it? How do you balance everything out? And sometimes I think I put more emphasis in one area of my life than in others. Sometimes I put no emphasis into either one because I'm focusing on my son, but I feel like I'm always going to be doing that. And I just have to let myself go there, you know. I wish sometimes when I'm like in the act of just like being on stage or singing, or if I don't feel tip top shape, then I feel like to work harder at this, like I have to can't forget, I have to warm up every day, or I have to, you know, I wish I had more time type of thing. And then I think to myself, like, I think other people must feel like this about other areas of their lives. It just so happens that mine are so like seem like both like real full-time type of stuff, and it is, but I'm more and more, as time goes on, I'm more and more comfortable about who I am. And I feel like I have to prove less and less of myself.
Yeah, I think I was also really curious there. You were talking about going back to your music communities and kind of getting this response you're getting from people being like, oh, like, why are you a professor? And I know the first day of class, like, one thing you said is it's very important that people refer to you as, like, Professor Gonzalez. Yeah. And never forget, you know, that you've worked really hard to be where you are. Yeah. And I was really curious, I guess, too, what your experience has been at Scripps, and like what kind of a response you've gotten from administration or professors here, and how they respond to you, especially as like a woman of color being a professor on this campus, and like how what has your experience been at Scripps?
You know, I have to say, for the most part, it's been with a great sense of, like, welcome. Like, I'm by women of color in the academy, but also by a lot of my white colleagues as well. I think that they've also been kind of open to seeing, like, what kind of stuff I do and, like, kind of, like, trying to pull me into certain things, you know? And I welcome that as well. I do think that... that I always, my job is to always remind folks that, like, when like when I meet people for the first time, they're like, oh, I've heard of you, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I know what they've heard. They've probably heard, you know, the Grammy, or, well, she's a singer, or she dances on top of the wooden box, or whatever. Right? So I'm always sort of like, okay, they probably, you know, they see this part of me, and I get it, and that doesn't bother me anymore, but I will sort of speak up if I feel that they're they just diminish me, and that's not a diminishment, because I think that that kind of work is really important, but if they just look at that but don't look at all this other stuff in academia that I've done, right?
Yeah.
And how I'm trying to make certain art praxis, you know, participatory music and dance practices, art in general, music, as an important, you know, important tools in community building and social movement more generally, right? So for me, I feel like I need to sometimes remind folks, like, you know, so my bios or my resumes will always start off with academic stuff, and then I'll move into some of the art stuff.
Yeah. You know?
So, and I feel like this is the right time for me. I think that people, the academy, I'm looking at how ASU welcomes me and wants me to do residencies there, and other institutions that invite me to give talks on my work, or, you know, that I realized, I was like, okay, I'm there. People want to hear something different, you know, they want to hear something, different kinds of approaches to music and art, and I feel like I'm probably right on time, you know. And there's going to be other folks that come up after me that I think that I can definitely go to bat for, because I'm going to have the language to do it with, you know.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like so often too, like, projects by communities that are, like, often marginalized and left out are never taken seriously because they don't have the right jargon to be considered academic. And so I think that's definitely a super important crossover. And one of the other projects I wanted to talk to you about also was the album we talked about in class, the Entre Mujeres album about women making music across borders. I've been playing that a lot on my show. I really like it.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, but I was wondering if you could talk about your process with that.
It really started off with, I mean, when I became part of the Fandango movement, or we were starting it was all my own dime. We're young, we have, you know, all this time on our hands, no kids yet, and we're just loving the Fandango movement. We save, we work to be able to go to Veracruz, hang out for a month, come back, you know, go to the mountains, come back, you know. We're going back and forth constantly, every either winter or every summer, because winter is big party time, you know, during this time period. And so we're very excited about that. We're doing that regularly, and then I have a baby. I have my son. I make it sound negative, but it was time. I wanted it to be time. I was 32 years old. I had my son, and everything changes, you know.
Yeah.
I started thinking we would continue to tour, but it was more difficult, and I decided I'm going to have to start looking toward the future. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
So I knew that the years that I had lived were important and they deserved to be written about. Other folks were writing about us. And so I was like, wait a minute, I could write about us. So I decided to apply for a Fulbright and also to grad school. And so I got into both. I got both. And I deferred the grad school for a year while I went to. But really, the Fulbright was just an excuse to sort of finish the work that I had started when I was pregnant with my son, and just based on our own thing, one of my friends from Veracruz came and we started writing a song together. We never finished it. She's like, we need to do more of this. We're like, yeah, it was time for her to go. She left. And then it wasn't till the Fulbright and my son was 2.5 years old that we went to live there, and we finished these songs along with building other ones. And then those that weren't finished in Veracruz, I brought back to Los Angeles, and we finished them here with Chicana Latinas. So it was all sort of started in community, translated into the academy, and then later, you know, and I continue to sort of translate those kinds of relationships. But they're all based in and around community-based practice of Fandango and you know, and with the specific focus on looking at the women in the movement, because so much of the movement, any movement, erases women. And so I was really adamant about, you know, in when the groups from Veracruz would come to LA, they would never bring their wives, or wouldn't bring the women in it, because unless they're single and aren't really attached to any one of the gentlemen in the group, you know, they would just, you know, stay home because they had kids, because it was just not a I don't know, something that they could leave their kids behind for somebody else to take care of, you know. It's just, it was tough. So I knew that we needed to document a lot of their voices, and because when we go to Veracruz, we'd see them there. There's a bunch of them, and wonderful singers, dancers, players, like killer, like musicians. But they never got to travel to LA, so all of us could hear them.
Yeah, and I know another important part of that, again, you were speaking to communities, and I, of course, this is about like women making music across borders, and we've studied that a lot in class, the importance of kind of crossing these borders and having this border consciousness of being from two places at once, really, and having this double consciousness. And could you speak more to how that played a role in making this album?
That's a great question. So I feel like... I think that by virtue of understanding and knowing the important dialogues that can take place between both communities is in and of itself a kind of inkling into what border consciousness is. And that is that the fact that the value in recognizing the value in this dialogue, right, first of all. And making a space for it is a kind of a border, you know, creating a space for it, you know, it's a border consciousness act, I think, as well. Right, so it's everything from the value I see in it to the stage that was set. Me being willing to be a conduit of it, I think, is also important to recognize, right? Where I'm the one that had to go back and forth, back and forth. My partner was amazing. He was like, when we couldn't get all the women in one room, because in Mexico, for example, here I am with a Fulbright, you know, I have a living stipend, and we're, it's not a whole lot of money, but we're there, we get to pay our rent, and we have spending money, you know, and I'm basically waiting throughout the day to see, and setting times for all these women to come out and write with the songs with me. And they're probably like, dude, I gotta work. I gotta take care of my kids. I gotta go. I have chamba, as they call it, right? And here I am waiting to see when they're gonna show up. You know, crossing my legs, having some coffee, like, you know, just there to write music. And I realized quickly that I needed to adjust. And so my partner really said, like, Marta, we need the technology. Like, let's, you know, we had a recording equipment. We started every session we had. Not all of them would get to come back every time, you know. So I feel like just being able to adjust to all the different needs and on either side of the border was really important. So, I mean, you know, just trying to get them together to write with each other, to write across the border, across borders, it's sort of, we recognize it, but we also won't let it limit us, right? The U.S., the actual U.S.-Mexican border. And in that, in and of itself, is kind of like living within a kind of, like, is articulating the kind of consciousness that, you know, where we're not going to let it stop us, you know.
Yeah, and I thought it was really great, too, that eventually you got everyone to play together live, right?
Yeah, exactly. So at some point it was, you know, and that was really hard. That was really difficult. But I feel like... We pulled it off. We did. I feel like we did a really. It was really, really stressful, but it was also really fun. And I realized I knew we were kind of making history, you know. And even if the whole movement doesn't recognize it now, I know that it's there, and somebody can access it one day, you know. So I get that. Like, I'm not, you know, I don't expect the bells and whistles. I just know that we got it done, and that's it. You know, moving on. Some folks want to be like, now what's the next album going to be like? And I thought about it, you know, and not with that configuration, but another kind of like border sort of like I was thinking about writing a new album with Susana Baca and other like amazing like Latin American artists.
Yeah.
She's a Peruvian artist, but so I'm kind of working on that a little bit along with Toto La Momposina and other folks. Mm. So I'm really looking forward to like possibly making that a future work load.
Wow, yeah, that'd be amazing. Looking forward to that. So do you have any advice you would say to up and coming like young women of color who want to go into music or want to go into academia?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I think that in music or in academia, you need to know the system. You need to know the system and know where you can challenge it. You can always challenge it, but you also need to know what the consequences are, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to know that, but also to choose your battles, right?
Yeah.
I think it's really important. When it comes to the music industry, it's the same thing. You need to, and mainly you need to know your business, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am not in the music industry in the ways in which people think like you should be or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know the business. I don't buy into it completely. I have friends who are all over, you know, Instagram, and now we're here, and now we're there, and now look at what we're doing. And the reality is that they're not making a whole lot of money.
Hmm.
Not like that's the only important thing, but there's no retirement there.
Yeah.
There's no, you're going to get old, and it'll tire you out if you let it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it for a while, and it was great fun, but it was also, I didn't see an end game, you know. And I knew so many amazing musicians
mm-hmm.
that were, you know, homeless,
mm.
that were addicted to, you know, that people didn't care if you were prolific. You were just, you know, you didn't have any teeth. Nobody really, you know. And they could praise you all they want and how amazing you are, but that's not going to feed you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to play that game, so. But in academia, I feel like, you know, tenure track is difficult, but I think that that's a possibility. And if not, then, you know, doing some lecturing here and there if you're able to. But that's also can be pretty tiring. So maybe it's watching my mom struggle all these years, and I knew that I wanted something a little more stable, something that I can be home in the summers for, be present for my son,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, as much as I could, you know, because this is also can be really time consuming, but, and have something for him, you know. So I feel like, you know, you just have to know the system.
Mm-hmm.
And choose your battles and know your business. We have to be smart about it, you know.
Yeah.
And if we do it for the heart and for the love of, you know, I mean, you could, but I think you also have to know, you know, when time's up as well. Mm.
Yeah. And also, like during this interview, we've talked about some of the organizations and collectives you're a part of, but are there any other ones or other groups you want people to know about?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, you know, Mujeres de Maíz is a very important 20 plus years of existence. Mujeres de Maíz for sure. You know, Women Who Rock, of course. There's also the Coachella artisans that are there.
Mm-hmm.
Purépecha communities, they do really wonderful work. Well, even if I, you know, those are the collectives that mm-hmm. I can really think of off the top of my head and the one that mm-hmm. I have more communication with. But more than that, I'd want to challenge folks to build collectives in their own right.
You know,
to find ways of sort of making art together and for a purpose, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the more we do things collectively, the better off we can all be. You know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you, Annie Bennett. I'm a fan of the show, y'all. Keep listening. Don't let us go.